This is episode 141 of the Anarchist News Podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite non-sectarian anarchist site, anarchistnews.org. What's new this week? The Roots of Turkish Fascism from CrimeThink. Wow, some straight-up history and solid journalism from CrimeThink, as well as the pretty pictures, of course. If you don't know why Greeks hate the Turks or what the relationship of Kurds to Turkey is, etc., this article has you covered. Quote, eventually, Turkey will have to re-recognize the Assad regime without the Russian mediation currently allowing it to save face. On the other side of the lines of conflict, the survival of the past 5 years of revolutionary gains in Rojava will depend on how the Kurdish movement manages to navigate a treacherous geopolitical terrain and at the same time generate international solidarity. Up to this point, Kurdish groups have demonstrated a shrewd understanding of the constantly shifting geopolitical dynamics, surviving the ups and downs, and gradually rising to prominence on the international stage. In the short term, the situation is desperate, but perhaps the long game will not be as catastrophic. Nevertheless, it is hard to make such predictions with our vision obscured by the fog of war, unquote. It's mostly not about anarchism at all, though it does end with an interview with an anarchist group in Turkey. But all that's good because we don't get our anarchy from CrimeThink anyway. This is solid background information as well as a bit of up-to-date info on how some Kurds are feeling now, which is predictably fucking exhausted and done with the goddamned unending conflict. Guess we didn't need CrimeThink for that, actually.
Education for Revolution from Zabalaza by Sean Hadding and Mandy Masuris. So, if you're like me and haven't yet come across a coherent, cogent explanation of what anarcho-syndicalism is, here you are. It won't surprise you, I expect, being full of federations, planned economies, the working class, trademark, direct democracy, revolution, etc., but it's good to know this is what at least some anarcho-syndicalists think anarcho-syndicalism is. Quote, anarcho-syndicalists reject the idea that political parties are revolutionary precisely because they mimic the state form and are at best based on representative democracy, which does not break down the power differences between the leaders and the led. Thus, at the heart of anarcho-syndicalism is the view that the working class, through revolutionary unions or similar working class formations, can and will undertake a revolutionary struggle against the state and capitalism. The aim of this revolution was to socialize the means of production and wealth and to run companies in the entire economy on the basis of worker self-management to meet the needs of all. Community and worker councils would be federated to plan the economy based on direct democracy. Federated community councils would replace the state and allow for direct democracy and freedom to be practiced throughout society, unquote. There is no need for me to add something snarky about, yeah, they will replace the state. No need. No need.
The Anarchist in the Cancer Center, from Bad News Press by Joe Peacott. Peacott is a longtime individualist anarchist currently living in Alaska, previously a member of the infamous Boston Anarchist Drinking Brigade, which of course no longer exists. Here he publishes an updated essay, the first version of which I read in Anarchy Magazine about 10 years ago, on thoughts on health and nursing as an anarchist. Quote, patients sign form after form declaring they are giving informed consent to this or that treatment or procedure, but most of them are ill-informed at best. This is usually not the fault of any individual, but the result of a combination of things. Physicians unable to take the time to fully explain treatments, other healthcare workers who are not knowledgeable enough to answer patients' questions, and patients who are overwhelmed by their diagnosis and really do not hear or understand what they are being told. I see it as my job to make sure patients get the information they need when they are most ready to absorb it, so they can understand what is happening to them and make truly educated decisions. I spend a lot of time explaining to people how to prevent or treat symptoms caused either by their disease or by the treatment they receive from me and others. Again, whether because they weren't told how to respond to them or didn't hear what they were told, patients often tolerate treatable conditions, including significant pain, without seeking help from their physician or other healthcare workers, unquote. This article is interesting on various fronts, including how to be an anarchist in a straight job. For example, how to actively encourage autonomy and appropriate skepticism in the people we work with and for. Also, an interesting comment thread.
Ineditas is fucking dead, from Ediciones and Editas. Short announcement that the project is ending, but that the people are not disappearing. Quote, other projects will likely rise up from the end of this one, but this project grew to be too difficult to manage, and you know how we feel about management. This project started very small and had no intention of reaching its present scale. In line with ultra-left thought, we know that organizations, projects, etc. come and go, and that such a cycle is necessary, but that class struggle itself does not end until all are free. We can only hope we've helped further the joint projects of communism and anarchy while this thing kicked and screamed, unquote. It's always nice when people are explicit about a transition, especially when it's not because of some sad and or fucked up shit.
Double Trouble, double feature at Interference Archive, from Submedia. This is an announcement of an event on November 23rd, a showing of two Submedia videos, one on robotics, AI, nanotech, etc., and the second on surveillance and the resistance to it. Quote, yet even with all these tools at their disposal, states around the world are finding it harder and harder to control the explosion of popular anger provoked by their increasingly severe policies of ecological destruction and capitalist exploitation. In this month's episode of Trouble, anarchist media collective Submedia interviews a number of individuals about their experiences of dealing with undercovers and informants, and looks at some of the ways that we can build movements that are more resilient to state and corporate surveillance, unquote. The event is happening at Interference Archive in Brooklyn, which sounds like it could be a cool space. Anyone been there? There's no info about whether there will be discussion about the videos at this event, or if it is all about passive recipients of the Submedia message.
More on Jerusalem, Eternalism, Anarchy, and Herbie, from Alan Moore World. Woohoo! Moore is a treasure and I don't read enough of him. This is well worth reading and learning from through all parts, but here's what he says about anarchy for the most limited among us. Quote, anarchy, meaning simply no leaders, to me implies a situation in which everyone must take responsibility for their own actions and, therefore, serve as their own leaders. In such a state, inter-individual cooperation is the most successful and thus the default form of interaction. This is why our species, for the hundreds of thousands of years that constituted its hunter-gatherer stage, was non-hierarchical, and why the greatest social sin in those earliest proto-societies was the attempt to claim greater status than anyone else, this being punishable by ridicule, and, when ridicule proved insufficient, by banishment. This is apparently still the tradition amongst some of the world's Aboriginal people up to the present day. It is currently thought that those earliest communities somehow realized that status would create divisions that would ultimately destabilize the entire culture. For me, anarchy suggests that to become fully realized as human beings, we must each make our own individual peace with the universe and stand as women or men, naked and denuded of status, at the heart of a stupefying and starry existence, which surely makes all such status less than meaningless. Anarchy was the political position that Charles Darwin came to believe the most rational and humane, and as defined above is a pretty exact representation of my own political beliefs, unquote. And Herbie is an old comic that I now have to go find somewhere, goddammit. Oh right, the internet.
Updates on the battle to defend Exarchia, for freedom, self-organization, and solidarity, from Act for Freedom. This is an informative article on the situation in Greece and in Exarchia particularly, including recent repression and resistance, from the Vancouver squad eviction to multiple protests and actions. Quote, the current rumor is that the state wants to evict all squats by November 17th. Another rumor puts the deadline at 6th of December. Both are significant dates in the history of the Greek anarchist movement, which are marked by annual riots. What all squats means is not entirely clear. What is clear from the past few weeks, however, is that attacks have been made on squats both inside and outside Exarchia, as well as in cities in other parts of the country, unquote. Calls for solidarity actions whenever and however. As a comment points out, Exarchia is at least as worth defending internationally as Rojava. The comment thread is complete with a class warrior talking about pigs. So there you go.
New research focus, the surveillance industry, from Ears and Eyes, a site in English, French, and Italian with a subtitle, quote, about surveillance devices hidden by cops in the spaces we live in, unquote. This article seems to be an introduction to the site as well as a provocation in itself. Quote, we think that understanding how the surveillance industry works, who sells the surveillance devices to the cops, and what the devices look like will help us to oppose the surveillance. So we have started a research work focused on this industry and particularly on the companies that participate in it. On our website, you will find an overview of the surveillance industry, a list of companies that sell surveillance devices to cops worldwide, and a list of the trade shows and other events where you are likely to find these companies, a glossary of the specific terms of the industry, and a list of other resources on the subject, unquote. Other recent titles on the site include two about GPS trackers recently found in Greece, an update of the list of devices, two GPS trackers and a microphone in a vehicle in Italy, etc.
The Arrow Loosed from Hong Kong, from Japanese site Heipak's blog, by Kid, translated by a member of Anarchist News. Information about Hong Kong from a different quarter, this essay compares what is happening today with the umbrella movement of 2014 and points out how, at least in the short term, some lessons have been learned from the celebrity status and short-lived actions of the 2014 events. Quote, "Those at the heart of the street movement are youth, rather young guys and girls, ages 13 through 16. They're forbidden from going out into the street by their parents, but in exchange they have a comprehensive support network of adults in every aspect of the movement. Even for those young people fired from their jobs, there exists a Telegram group offering highly compensated jobs and manual labor. The young people carrying the vanguard of this movement are few in number and make up a small block, but they don't even know one another's names. A certain friend formed a black bloc group for the sole reason that they lived next to each other. They decided on their tactics while messaging on Telegram. New tactics and structures are being born that surpass the organizational theory from the anti-globalization movement's affinity groups. According to a comrade there, the rebellion this time expresses the destruction of the city called Hong Kong, skyrocketing housing costs due to redevelopment, and on the other hand, the closing off of the future between China and the West. Young people run shared houses and industrial zones where dwellings have been forbidden. There's no proper work. Everyone says they can't see a future. Young people sense the limits of the drawn-out existing system. This insurrection is a movement to cast off the living creature of the city." Unquote.
Letter from an anarchist internationalist in Rojava from the German language site baraka.info. This is the letter translated into English with a German following. It's a first-person account of the chaos of the days of Turkish attacks on the Kurds, following Trump's removal of U.S. troops and abandonment of U.S. allies. Quote, "The first days were very chaotic. We tried to keep calm and to prepare for the invasion. Yes, the last months of the preparation made sense. It became reality. To realize, despite all fear, what war actually means, the bravery to assure oneself of a decision made. At the same time, there are the doubts that everything will be silenced, that no one in this world will hear about that barbarism. When war arrives, it is a distant war with a lot of unexpected bombings that you'll only hear at the very last moment. When the bombs fall, they fall. When it happens, it happens. After days, you learn to acknowledge them, and at the same time, when the wounded friends start to arrive, also come the feelings they awaken us. Sadness on the one hand, because the war machinery is monstrous, and on the other hand, also the strength to fight for them. All the defending units, those that already have been here and those that arrived when the Turkish aggression intensified, kept the city safe despite movements of the jihadist groups and enabled the transfer of the wounded to the city till Tamir, until Turkey cut that road and it wasn't possible anymore to bring them here." Unquote.
Hacking back, how to rob a bank, from CrimeThink. This is an article about a hacker zine in Spanish explaining how someone hacked a bank, stole money, and gave it away. For those of us who have some abilities in this direction, take note, goddammit. Quote, "The guide explains in detail the initial intrusion and escalation of privileges within the bank system and offers a crash course regarding how to navigate the internal SWIFT network operations until money can be transferred to a bank drop, then cashed out, and anonymously converted to cryptocurrency. It also refers readers to a dump of internal data from the bank, defending this disclosure as a means of exposing those who sit at the top of economical hierarchies, protected by the privileges of a system designed to benefit them. According to the sub Cao Mandante, hacking does not need to be as sophisticated as the security industry and the intelligence community want us to believe it is. The guide suggests that social engineering and phishing, combined with some operative knowledge about Windows hacking, should be enough to get us inside the networks of most companies. To reinforce this idea, the publication demystifies the procedure that was used to achieve the famous hack into the hacking team vaults. Quote, "You don't need to be a genius. I certainly am not. Persistence and determination are far more valuable," she insists. Unquote. This is a fun read and a fantastic provocation for some criminal character you want in your next novel, of course. None of us would ever break the law.
Audio. Margaret Killjoy on creating culture, anarchism, and her new EP, An Hour from the Final Straw. Episode starts off with Sean Swain commenting on the certain days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar, with some light teasing as they were unable to print Sean's piece due to advocating, quote, "blowing up specific things," unquote. Next, an interview with, quote, "writer, musician, and anarchist based in Western North Carolina," unquote, Margaret Killjoy. I will admit to being charmed by what definitely seems like a conversation between two peers and friends as William and Margaret discuss music, fiction, Tolkien, and the concept of anarchist cultural production. The interview goes a little off the rails on that last point, though, with Margaret claiming that mainstream acceptance of certain formerly fringe ideas, e.g. gender identity, positive consent, etc., is a victory for anarchists. On top of that already specious claim, Killjoy equates this, scare quotes, victory with a Malatesta quote about accepting reforms as an advancing army takes land. No thank you.
A discussion on the growth of Black and anti-colonial anarchist formations. An hour and 20 minutes from It's Going Down. An extended interview with, quote, two people on the growth of Black, New African, and anti-colonial anarchist formations. One of the people joining us in the discussion is a part of the Philadelphia chapter of the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, and the other person is from the Afrofuturist Abolitionists of the Americas, unquote. This is, despite being from IGD, actually a pretty interesting conversation touching on the movement of former Black Panther and Black Liberation Army members to anarchism, the Black radical tradition, and, quote, little anarchism or simply anarchy on the day-to-day self-organization and revolt of everyday people in the face of the American plantation and finding ways to build solidarity and action with these organic forms, unquote. Unfortunately, as is always the case when someone is brought in as a representative of a group or identity, certain statements go a bit too far. In particular, the critique that white anarchists' problems stem from their being too, quote, lifestyleist and subcultural, unquote, making the argument that someone who is Black and anarchist could never be those things, which doesn't seem very anarchist.
Anarchy or annihilation! An hour and 8 minutes from Coffee with Comrades. Woo boy! Now I, Greg, haven't read Bookchin and so can only go off what the host took from the essay, so here we go. Apparently, because industrialization slash society has moved beyond natural scarcity, thanks capitalism, take that pre-modernity, we could now be living lives of ease, free of domination and toil due to automation. Thanks Congolese cobalt! Also, I guess that we can prefigure the revolution in order to have the revolution in order to self-actualize ourselves, and also we should get state Marxists to realize that Dick Pro is bad. Okay, Bookchin.
Climate mobilizations in Vancouver. 50 minutes from Embers, a dubbed interview with, quote, two anarchists from Vancouver about their efforts to intervene in the climate strike and Extinction Rebellion actions in that city, unquote. Although I do think it's interesting when anarchists go out and interact with the outside world slash non-anarchist groups, this mostly seems like a huge headache, and this interview does little to dispel that notion.
Anarchy Bang, episode Okay, Boomer, 2 hours, quote, aging. In the 90s, it seemed the average age of the anarchist horde was in the late teens slash early 20s. By the WTO, happy anniversary, it was more like college-aged or mid-20s. Today, the bell curve is flattening out, and an average seems well into the 30s. I remember a friend opined that as the economy stopped absorbing people, the age range of an anarchist would continue to rise. Whether it is politics, the economy, or a change in countercultural norms, the anarchist is aging. What does this mean? Does it mean that generation gaps are occurring in the anarchist space? Does it mean we have more money and conservatives in our midst? Are we experiencing the same okay boomer moment the rest of the culture is? This is the second of the last 4 episodes of this show, and we hope you can join us in conversation, unquote.
Okay, boomer, 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 okay, okay, boomer, okay.
Criteria, the topic of the week on Anarchist News. Ever since the Anarchy Bang episode on music, in which the word anarchist was thrown around like a frisbee for a caffeinated border collie, I've been pondering and harassing my friends with the question of how one determines whether something is anarchist or not. In the podcast episode, it was A, if the artist called themselves an anarchist, B, if the content was about anarchist topics, question mark, C, if the content reflected anarchist values, D, if the listener felt anarchisty, several question marks, when listening to it, E, if the musician felt anarchisty while making it, and F, all creativity is anarchist. I might have missed a few. All of these are fine, though many raise more questions than they resolve. What are your thoughts on this? Do you call something anarchist and then think it's good? Do you think it's good and then call it anarchist? My personal favorite. What are the ramifications for you of calling something anarchist? There is no need for a centralized definition, and I would be bored personally with a conversation in which people were trying to convince each other. But what is your personal criteria, or do you not think about it this way? Remember, no animals were hurt in the making of this topic of the week. No one is signed on the dotted line. These are thought exercises for fun and pleasure.
I will begin by giving a shout out to Nettle, who, you know, rarely do I read the comments on these topic of the weeks before I dive into the conversation, but Nettle does a nice job of summarizing what I think is the right answer to this particular question. Why is there this obsession with if something is anarchist or not? Is this book anarchist? Is this piece of music anarchist? Is this tofu salad anarchist? For myself, I actually care about it. If I actually care about it, I ask, is this art made by an anarchist? Or I ask myself, is this helpful in getting free? Do I find this enjoyable? Does this further my growth in my anarchism or in my person? Does this practice help me live here and now, or does it hinder me? When I ask such questions, I find it often doesn't matter if the thing is anarchist per se. The benefit to me is, do I find it useful? Can I wrest anarchist content out of it? Can I repurpose it? And that's nice. It keeps everything as open as it possibly could be. And of course, we all know the terminology you hang off of something does not matter. The thing itself either matters or doesn't. End sentence.
Yeah. End sentence. Yeah, yeah. Good. Yeah. So the thing itself and not the words.
Attributes.
You might attribute to it, or you might not. Someone else might use a different word. Yeah, so this is going back to the Anarchy Bang episode of last week that I listened to most of it, and I think this A, B, C, D, E was in reference to the various people who called in with these various ideas, like it is if the artist called themselves an anarchist, etc. Nettle as open, you know, rather than closing down this the topic of the week, I actually think that opens it up infinitely. Although it's framed very open by whoever wrote this topic of the week as well, in response, I think, to these various attempts to kind of close it down over the Anarchy Bang episode. I don't know if that was your feeling from where you were on the mic, that these various attempts to say this is anarchist music, and all these different definitions coming at you. And yeah, to be honest, I almost rang in myself, Aragon, because, you know, it's easy to get caught up in that kind of thing and to, you know, use your definition and your example and say, well, what about crass, you know?
Sure.
But yeah, now that, you know, that episode has passed, we've had a week to reflect on the topic and you know, with these helpful comments like Nettles, I think it's open, and I'm happy with where Nettle has opened it up to. I do think, I mean, so can I just pass this back to you, Aragon? Like you always have music in your podcasts, the brilliant, etc. When you have to choose those songs from, you know, from a huge pool, and do you ask any, you know, when you're choosing, what kind of questions are you asking, beyond, you know, is this, I remember one was about someone called an article about, you were talking about someone called William, and you played the song,
the Smiths song,
the Smiths, that goes with William, it was really nothing. Is that the depth of the thinking that goes into choosing these tracks? What's going on there?
Well, the truth is that when it comes to both the Inus podcast and also the Brilliant, the music is chosen by the sound editor. Hmm. And I am not the sound editor.
Right.
Okay. So I like it because sometimes the choices are kind of snotty or silly or funny. Hmm. And I wish more of our projects had more what I call density, but essentially what boils down to exactly that, the William. And, you know, projects look and feel nicer when three or four people's hands touch them. Mm. And a lot of our projects suffer for, you know, one or two people essentially being the people. Yeah. The positive thing about the ANews podcast in particular, which obviously this is part of, is that it does feel like six or so people's hands touched it because six or so people's hands touched it. And that makes it in some ways a qualitatively better project than the Anarchy Bang podcast, which we basically just dump in real time. Like there's no editing, there's no, you know, every boring anecdote is in every episode of Anarchy Bang. Also, as a result, you know, it's clear that the effort is three people, two people, sometimes less. And that's one of the reasons why we're stopping that project is just because, like, that matters.
Is that definitely happening then? Yeah, so Anarchy Bang it's being round up. That is to think back the week before when they were the guest who talked about music and criteria. His name was Lou. I thought that worked well because he really, really put his stamp on it, so it didn't feel like, you know, it wasn't just. But yeah, okay, so to return to the music one and this week's topic of the week, I can see a problem with putting criteria. So if you have very few people, let's say just one or two, and they're all working with their own criteria, then that became that show, you know, that hour or however long it was very much defined by these few criteria that people were bringing to that hour and a half. And yeah, I mean, that would be an example of how, rather than doing what Nettle has done and opening it up, it can just be used to close it down and result in, you know, what felt like quite a like the opposite of whatever the show with Lou was.
Yeah.
The music one
was amazing. I mean, part of the issue here is that for a show like Anarchy Bang, where you want there to be a lot of conversation, you want it to be provocative. So having people with strong opinions is a pretty good thing in that context. You know, like having a loudmouth who has an opinion makes people want to call up and say, shut up, you're wrong. And so I like that. The flip side of that, though, is that if you just have big loudmouths on every week, it turns a lot of people off in the long term because it's not that compelling. You know, the problem with the music conversation was I thought more people were going to call in from the beginning. So I thought that the one person who sort of had a narrow perspective but a strong one, I thought they were going to fade into the mix instead of being sort of the leader of the episode.
The special guest.
Yeah.
I mean, and to bring it back to the topic of the week, I mean, that is partially a problem of criteria, where if there isn't the variety.
Go ahead.
No, I was coming back to the questions in the topic of the week. But go on, I'll come back. What were you going to say?
Well, really, the question that we have to ask ourselves is, like, what's the goal of what we're trying to do? Criteria sort of implies that we're trying to have a political debate about right and wrong. And, that's very rare that am I in that situation. Whereas the episode of Anarchy Bang, or just in general, they sort of imply, like, how do you have a good conversation? How do you not only invite people to join it, because obviously we're always doing that, but how do you effectively do it? Like, I can't predict when a show is going to be engaged and interesting and when it's going to be just men yelling at each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is the challenge of a call-in show, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
You never know who's going to call in and you know, how those people are going to relate to one another. Well, I you know, I thought the week before was great. You have had that same guest on the Brilliant. I don't know. I will miss it, Aragon. Even if not everyone will. I will miss Anarchy Bang. I think it was a good project. And as brought up, this isn't the only topic of the week that has come from an Anarchy Bang episode. So even if the hour and a half itself wasn't, didn't get much done. This topic of the week has had some really interesting comments on it, and yeah, has made me think. I think I mentioned to you before that I did draft my own response to the Anarchy Bang episode, but it wasn't. I like how they've opened it up even wider than I was trying to do. And yeah, I hope this conversation carry on as well. Just this, I mean, this final sentence here. What are the ramifications for you of calling something anarchist? You know, does that mean that this is, you know, when you go to your playlist, you will always go to the songs that you've tagged anarchist? You know, when you get your phone out, you know, who do you? You know, do you have, like, I actually know someone who does this, has can label friends, you know, like they label them by their interpretation of, Marxist or, what does that mean for you? You know, using that word, not about yourself, about someone else, or even about something like music. You know, what does that mean for you? I concluded myself, Aragon, that when it comes to music, it actually means very little or nothing to me. I don't really listen to music, you know, with that criteria in mind.
Well, I think that it used to be that. I don't know where I want to go here. On the one hand, my entire life for the past 30 years has been a process of me trying to hang off of anarchism more and more interesting context. So at this point, the anarchism is sort of like buried by all the cruft. But that cruft is also called daily life. You know, it's called who I live with, who I work with, why we do the things we do, why we choose the enemies we choose, etc. But for most people, for them to understand why the anarchism is in there, is sort of too much to say in words. So I think it's fair to sort of say that, like, this is the environment in which these things happen, but it doesn't require you to mention, you know, Stirner or Bakunin or Freire or whoever to join in the conversation.
Yeah, that's...
It's the water we swim in.
Yeah, it's the water. Yeah, it's the water we swim in. I think, you know, the water that you're in now, like you say, has kind of grown over decades.
Yeah.
That's not, you know, to lots of people who are who will read Anarchist News, who would listen to the podcast, etc. I think they're, the water that they're in doesn't feel, it feels very shallow, it doesn't feel like there's much anarchy in there, in that no one they know other than themselves and some people they talk to on the internet would even use that word, in the context of their lives, I can see why it would seem more important to them that they had all the crass records on their shelf or something like that. I think what the point I'm trying to make is that's very much dependent on the context of the individual and where they are in their life. If we had this conversation 30 years ago, the pool you were in would also be shallower, and there would be far less opportunities to say be able to put together a circle of friends where you would all call yourselves anarchists.
Go ahead.
And then from there, once you're in that kind of, in that circle, in that pool, things, I suppose, feel more anarchist, and you become then less kind of concerned about that criteria, about that word.
Your metaphor is quite nice. I mean, the idea that you stay in the shallow end for as long as you can, you need the flags, you need the notification that it's shallow here, you don't drown here, all of that is very good. And then one day you decide to head out to the deeps, to the depths, and see if you like that.
Yeah, and maybe you drown. But everything feels different from that. Yeah, well, immersed, isn't it? Immersed. There you go. To continue the metaphor. You're immersed then. You're full immersion, sink or swim, and from there, everything looks different. I mean, maybe that's the conversations was, the points people are coming from on the podcast was so different, and perhaps it just comes from being someone in the deep end drowning like yourself, Aragon, someone just paddling in the shallow end. Neither of those better than the other, but I know from experience when you're in the shallow end, however many years ago that was, from certainly not 30 years ago, maybe only 5 or 6 years ago, these words feel much heavier, Oh, anarchist, if you heard this music, is anarchist. What do you mean that's anarchist? Well, it seems like something worth fighting over on a podcast.
Thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you.
De vous, les damnés de la terre, les despotes épouvantés, sentant sous leurs pas un cratère.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Greg. The What's New was written by Jackie and Greg and read by Chisel and Greg. No editorial this week. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackcart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room, linked on A-News.
Les forçats de misère, ils ont nous latin, slave germain. Que la Troisième République se prostitue.